Shivaradhadi Jasodanandana Brajajanarandhana Jasodanandana Brajajanarandhana Yamuna Tiravana Chadi Yamuna Tiravana Chadi Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihadi Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihadi Gopi jana balabha girivara dhadi Gopi jana balabha girivara dhadi Jasodanandana Brajajanaranjana Jasodanandana Brajajanaranjana Jamanathiravana Chadi Jamuna Tiravana Chadi Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hadi Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivirakacharya Sri Sri Madhas Divine Grace Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Ananta Koti Vaishnavarinda Ki Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki korpimanandi. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya There's an extra book here in case this long verse is hard to read because its lettering is small. And I have no idea what the meter is. I fooled around with it upstairs, and so I'm going to wing it. It's not the right meter. Hastagraye rachayati vidhim Pita kolo kuladyais. Chidram yantar nihita Vayuna shikya bandhadeshu tat vit. Dvantagare dritamani ganam svangam artha pradipam. Kale gopyo yarhi graha krityeshu suvyagra chita. Pretty difficult, huh? Hastya graye rachati rachayati vidhim. Pita kalolu kalo ka lu kaladhyais. Chidram yantair lihita vayuna shikya bandeshu tat vit. Dvantagare drita maniganam svagam artha pradipam. Kale gopyo yarhi graha krityeshu suvyagra chita. I think we're going to skip trying to have everybody else do it because it's the wrong... anyway, I'll just do the word for word. Hasta agraye. When the destination is out of reach of his hands. Racha yati. He arranges to make. Vidhim a means. Pitaka, by wooden planks piled together. Ulukala adhyai, by overturning the stone mortar for grinding spices. Chidram, a hole. He, indeed. Anta nihita, about the contents of the pot. Vayunaha, with such knowledge. Shikya, hanging by a swing. Bandeshu, in the pots. Tat vit, expert in that knowledge, or in full knowledge. Dvantaha agare, in a very dark room. Drita mani ganam, because of being decorated with valuable jewels. Sva angam, his own body. Artha pradipam, is the light required for seeing in darkness. Kale, after that, in due course of time. Gopyaha, the elderly gopis. Yarhi, as soon as. Griha kriteshu, in discharging household affairs. So vyagra Chitta are busily engaged. So, long verse with a long translation. When the milk and curd are kept high on a swing hanging from the ceiling and Krishna and Balaram cannot reach it, they arrange to reach it by piling up various planks and turning upside down the mortar for grinding spices. Being quite aware of the contents of a pot, they pick holes in it. While the elderly gopis go about their household affairs, Krishna and Balaram sometimes go into a dark room, brightening the place with the valuable jewels and ornaments on their bodies, and taking advantage of this light by stealing. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Formerly, in every household, yogurt and butter were kept for use in emergencies. But Krishna and Balaram would pile up planks so that they could reach the pots and would then pick holes in the pots with their hands so that the contents would leak out and they could drink it. This was another means for stealing butter and milk. When the butter and milk were kept in a dark room, Krishna and Balaram would go there and make the place bright with the valuable jewels on their bodies. On the whole, Krishna and Balaram engaged in stealing butter and milk from the neighborhood houses in many ways. And the next verse is equally long. Maybe I'll find somebody that knows the meter. So the context is, for those that weren't with us yesterday, this is Krishna's childhood pastimes. The topic is Lord Krishna shows the universal form. So coming up shortly is that Krishna shows Mother Jasoda the whole universe within his mouth, the whole universal form within his mouth. Arjuna saw the universal form before him while seated on the chariot, and Mother Jasoda saw that universal form within Krishna's mouth. Of course, slightly different description. So the prior verses, Krishna's just learned to toddle, to walk, like a child kind of clumsily walks, from crawling to walking. Balaram, this is an interesting point. Jiva Goswami, in his commentaries, explains that Balaram's appearance day was just a short period of time before Krishna's appearance. Because the seventh child of Devaki was Balaram, and Balaram was transferred to the womb of Rohini. So if Balaram is transferred to the womb of Rohini, how is it that Balaram is only a few days older than Krishna? Pregnancy number 8 had to take some time. And Jiva Goswami doesn't explain that one. I don't recall his explanation, but he says just a short period of time, they were approximately the same age, demonstrated by their developmental stages as children, from crawling to toddling, etc. They were about the same age, Balaram, the elder brother, by some number of days. And I'll, before tomorrow morning, I'll look up and see what Jiva Goswami says, if I can find it. How the birth dates were so close together. Just a number of days. In any case, they're about the same age, only days apart. And so leading up is from the main subject of chapter 8 is the universal form, and then the next is the Damodar Lila. So Balaram assisted Krishna. Here we have the gopis assisting Krishna, or assisting Mother Jasoda, the eternal associate of Krishna, Shakti Tattva Mother Jasoda, to experience the happiness of ecstatic love by hearing topics of Krishna. We're hearing Shukadeva Goswami's rendering of those topics that the elder gopis and Mother Jasoda were relishing. So we're very fortunate. We don't have the feelings of a parental love or ecstatic emotion that Mother Jasoda was experiencing, and they were experiencing. And the pastimes of Krishna are to help create the circumstance for topics about him that they could enjoy. So this morning's verse is a continuation from the previous, and the next one is on a similar topic, Krishna's activities of stealing. It's not the only time, again, that chapter 9 discusses the Damodar Lila, the stealing. But Mother Jasoda is hearing these reports as if criticizing, but actually it's their affection. And so yesterday we heard the preliminary, one part I neglected to mention, is sometimes the elders would come back to their home after looking to see the calves had been released from prematurely or too early in the day to go to the cows and drink all the milk, so they got them back in their proper position. They went back into the house and they sometimes saw Krishna and Balaram smilingly eating their store of butter and yogurt. And Krishna would just smile. And if they were in a mood, then he would just laugh at them and they would see him doing it. And now they're just going to Mother Jasoda and like not saying, you know, it was really fun, Krishna was eating her. They were saying it as, you know, he's a naughty boy, mischievous boy. So I think what I'm going to do is, rather than try to reproduce, our acharyas are artists like this, Leela. Many paintings are there of Krishna and Balaram and the cowherd boys and the monkeys all around going into the storeroom and standing on the one boy, standing on another boy's shoulders with a stick, poking a hole in the bottom of the pot, and the yogurt or whatever is inside dripping down, and the boys catching whatever's dripping down. He would devise the way in the second line, tat vit. You'll hear it in the commentary. It means he just knew how. Like, why don't you stop him? Well, we can't stop him. He knows the art of just looking at the pot, knowing what's in the pot by the outside of the pot. Doesn't say how he knew. And then if it was too high, they couldn't tip it by standing on shoulders. They would get some instrument, an iron rod or a stick with a metal piece at the end, and poke a hole in the bottom of the pot so the yogurt would drip down, and they would steal it that way. And it was a happiness that Krishna enjoyed. So let me read what they say. These are our acharyas. So this is the way that the commentary is done. It's as if it's a dialogue between. It's not just, so we're getting this as just one kind of complaint. But the commentary breaks it down into they say, Mother Jasoda responds, then they say to her response, and it flows like that. That's how they did their commentary. So this is Vishwanath, and then Jiva Goswami. Vishwanath writes, another day, he entered another house, and not being able to reach the pot, he thought of some method. Sometimes he piles up seats, or climbs on a mortar, or on the shoulders of other boys. He knows what is in the pots hung by string from the ceiling, just by seeing the exterior. If unable to take the contents, he makes a hole with a pole with pointed head. A sharp iron point at the end of a stick. He knows all about this work. Tad vit. What's that? How to put a hole in the pot. How to get the yogurt pouring out. How to open the mouths of the boys and let them take their fill. Even in the dark, it is not impossible. In dark rooms, their bodies and also their jewels act as lamps. Nothing is unknown to them. Mother Jasoda, why don't you be more careful? Their reply, when everyone is busy in household affairs, he comes. Though he has a bewitching power for stealing, with his soft smile, his baby words, his sweet movements, and bodily beauty, he likes to steal on the sly in order to find out who is there. He sends other boys as spies to the gopis' houses. And here's Jiva Goswami. Mother Jasoda, you are speaking something amazing. I want to hear his method of stealing. The elder gopis. He certainly produces a method for getting it in his hands by using wooden planks, mortars, and other items, such as climbing on the backs of his friends, as described by Vilva Mangala in the words Pita Nishana Balaka Gale, placing his feet on the nape of neck of a crouched boy. He climbs on the shoulders of another boy. Mother Jasoda. But the pot is placed very high above him. Elder gopis. He produces a hole in the pot hanging from a rope by using a stick with a long pointed end. Mother Jasoda. But from afar, It is difficult to make a hole which will pour out the liquid contents. The pot will break. Gopis. He knows how to do it. Tad. Lit. Mother Yashoda. How does he know which pot among all the pots has the desirable contents? Gopis. By seeing the qualities of the pot, he knows what is inside. Why do you not keep the pots in a dark corner? He lights up the darkness with his limbs. He does not depend on his jewels. He wears the jewels because of anxiety, in case there is some deep darkness that his effulgence cannot penetrate. If he does not wear jewels, there may be small traces of darkness remaining. People think that by putting jewels on the thief, you're helping him steal. These rare gems may be stolen from our husbands. They think that he should not wear these ornaments anymore. It is astonishing that, though he wears invaluable jewels, he steals milk. They then laughed. Mother Yashoda, if this is true, hide. Catch him and bring him here. Because Mother Yashoda is kind of, come on. So if it's true, bring him here. It is not possible because he comes when it is not possible to catch him, when we're busy with household chores. His commentary says this is emphasizing Krishna's devious ways. How does he know what is in the pot? By the characteristics of the pots, he can understand. You are all gossiping. What are you saying? My child is innocent. Gopis. He has knowledge of what is held in the pots because of his intelligence. He has knowledge of others' goods and of time. He is expert in making holes and climbing to inaccessible places. They all laughed because of his power to bewilder them. It should be understood that he was a great thief because he was complete in all qualities. We discussed this yesterday, but no harm to repeat it. In loving affairs, sometimes the object of love is described or characterized with apparent dislike or unhappiness. When we were in Puri, one of the verses that Ramananda Roy requested Rupa Goswami to describe from his dramas, the Dugdha and the Lita Madhava, said, please describe what the characteristic of ecstatic love is. And it's a very interesting description. The essence of it is, it doesn't matter what the other person does. The relationship doesn't waver or break, and the object of love is fixed. He says, from both sides, when the object of love does something that's displeasing, or when the object of love does something that's very pleasing, the ecstatic love is constant. And conversely, when the object of love sees that one's words or conduct is pleasing or displeasing, It doesn't change the affection between the two. This is ecstatic love. This is the sign of, this is, you know, in other words, spontaneous devotional service, bhava. So that for worldly people, someone comes into your house and steals, into your storeroom and steals, it's disturbance. It's unliked, and it's just like, not okay. Now they're speaking in this way, and they're also laughing in this way. They're enjoying Krishna's mischievous pastimes. They don't hold it against Mother Jashoda. They don't. They want her to correct him. Now, in this is preliminary because she's saying, "I don't believe you." And you know, how many cows does Nanda Maharaj have? He has so much. But why is he going to other places to steal? I don't believe you. Now, she's not like angry at them or anything. She's just, again, amongst the associates of the elder gopas and gopis, they have affection for one another that's also unbreakable because it's in relation to Krishna. That relationship is also unbreakable. It's all of spontaneous nature. So she can say such things, and they can say such things to her. They can have such feelings towards Krishna. She can have such feelings towards him also. And doesn't change the ecstasy of love doesn't change. There's variegatedness without contamination. There's emotion without displeasure. And everything, all of that is possible because of the transcendental nature of Krishna. The transcendental nature of Krishna is everything increases the happiness of love toward Krishna. It's a material consciousness defying concept. Material consciousness can't embrace. Just like, for example, here's a couple of for examples. For example, Krishna becoming angry. Now, a holy person is expected to not be angry, and the object of love of the holy person is expected to not be angry. And then there's transcendental anger. And that transcendental anger is ecstatic. Or, a real important one, in that the prayers of Prahlad, is when the four Kumaras come to the gates of Vaikuntha. You have to listen carefully. When the four Kumaras come to the gates of Vaikuntha and they're checked from entering by the gatekeepers, Jai and Vijay, they say, Prabhupada writes, they say, in Vaikuntha, the abode of Madhu Dvisha, there is no contamination of the modes of nature. But you two are contaminated by the modes of nature. So you have no place here. We curse you. You leave the place. Take birth in the earth planet where there's the modes of nature. Now, the name of the Lord of Vaikuntha, Narayana, that they used is Madhu Dvisha. The long story made short. Prabhupada named one of his disciples in Australia Madhu Dvisha And one time he asked Prabhupada, he became a GBC and secretary, asked Prabhupada, what does my name mean? And Prabhupada said, Madhu refers to one of the two demons, Madhu and Kaitaba, that stole the Vedas from Brahma. And Vishnu responded to the appeal of Brahma to check them, and Dvisha means envy. He spoke in the moment before about anger. Here's envy. Like Lord Srinadev, he was angry. And here is Madhu, is Dvisha, envy. So Madhu Dvisha said, how is this possible? How is the Supreme Lord envious? He's the Supreme Lord. He's the most powerful. He's the controller of everything. Nothing is outside of his control. How can he be envious? Prabhupada, everything is possible. Everything is there in the Supreme Lord. Envy, dvisha, or dvesha, like living entities take birth in this material world overcome by raga and dvesha. So that's the material kind of dvesha, but there's a spiritual kind. When Lord Vishnu saw Madhu, he felt a transcendental dvisha, free from the modes of nature. Everything is there in the absolute. Otherwise, you have something that's not there in the absolute, then he's not the source of everything. And everything here is a contaminated version of that. It's transcendental knowledge. It's mysterious to material consciousness. So therefore, the measure of worldly morality, just like Krishna inspiring Arjuna to become angry, because without, Prabhupada explains, without becoming angry, you can't fight. It wasn't a mock fight, it was fight to death. So Krishna purposefully inspired Arjuna's transcendental anger. He wanted Arjuna to fight. So he inspired it. So that's a mystery. For moralists, it's bad. Arjuna fought. Krishna inspired Arjuna to fight and to kill. So Krishna's bad and Arjuna's bad. Gandhi said like that. I don't know if you're probably aware. Gandhi said in his Bhagavad Gita commentary, if there was actually a Kurukshetra battle and Krishna had Arjuna fight at the Kurukshetra battle, if it's actually a fact, I renounce my Hinduism. And I reject Bhagavad Gita. But it's not that. There was no Kurukshetra battle. There was no Krishna inciting Arjuna, because he's this, you know, non-violent Gandhi. He was an impersonalist. He didn't allow attributes of transcendence to the supreme transcendent. But the attributes of transcendence are there within the supreme all. Not minus some. They're all there. So, with mundane moral yardsticks, one can't understand transcendence. It's a problem for worldly people to really embrace Bhagavad Gita. It can be a problem for devotees to really embrace Bhagavad Gita. And certainly, reading pastimes where Krishna's stealing and he's being, you know, he's loved. Or, extended further, Krishna's with the gopis and it's immoral. And scholarly people, or even not so scholarly people, people that come to know, they have doubt. We've all heard How can you worship this debauchee, immoral, other men's wives and young girls and in the dead of night? How can you worship such a person? They say. If they don't say, if they come to know, then they have. And if they don't even think about it, some point in time, maybe they'll think about it, and it causes a doubt. So there, fundamentally, it's important before going too far with our hearing and chanting that we understand the transcendental nature of Krishna. And then when we hear such pastimes, they're pastimes. He, Krishna, is taking butter that belongs, because everything belongs to Krishna, it belongs to Krishna. And he's enjoying this commotion created by his stealing, as we heard yesterday. When we offer, we just go to him and say, please take some butter and yogurt, as much as you would like. He's not interested. He waits for the opportunity, he cleverly finds a way to steal, and he steals. Then he'll eat. He'll eat, and he'll eat, and then he'll go to the next place and do it again. The happiness is not just the eating of the dairy products. He likes to steal. Now, that's curious. Why is he showing a pastime, the Supreme Lord? Because this is the moralist argument. He's the Supreme Lord. He's the independent personality Godhead. Whatever he does sets an example, and so other people think it's okay to steal. It's okay to have war. It's okay to be with other men's wives. It's okay. Because he's setting the standard. This is the difference between... It's one of the important features of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. Is he demonstrated extreme degrees of adhering to the order of sannyas. So many rejecting Chota Haridas and so many things. We discussed some of them yesterday. Morally and intellectually, like scholarly, impeccable, the best. And great fascination for the love of the residents of Vrindavan for Krishna, and particularly the gopis, and particularly Radharani. Then it's of the transcendental nature. And we have these examples, I'll give one more, that tell us the nature of Krishna and Krishna's pastimes is fully transcendental. But it kind of like remains intellectual or on the mind platform and not fully within the heart. Unfortunately, because our material contamination doesn't go fully in. The classic, or one of the classics, is Shukadeva Goswami becoming attracted to Srimad Bhagavatam. And then the sages, this is Canto 1, Chapter 7, when they hear, oh, wait a minute. He was Brahman realized even before he was born. So why is Shukadeva Goswami undergoing the trouble of studying anything? He's already there. He's already a realized, perfected soul. Why is he undergoing trouble to study something? Because what happened when he heard verses, he came back to the ashram, and along with the other students of Vyas, he studied Srimad Bhagavatam under Vyas in detail. And then he left again. But he heard Srimad Bhagavatam in detail from Vyasa. So why did he do that? Because the wonderful pastimes of Ajita was more attractive than the neutrality position of Brahman realization. Meaning, the implication is, the pastimes like these pastimes, Krishna stealing, is more attractive than transcendence and neutrality, which is what to speak of more attractive than morality. Now, in this world, people have trouble being moral, say the least. Trouble being in the mode of goodness, which is the platform of morality. So how do you go beyond morality to get people to be transcendental when they're degraded? You have to teach them morality. They have to have proper conduct. They don't know what to speak of what's the goal of that proper conduct. They don't know that either. It's like the age of Kali, it's very dark. They don't know. They don't know the goal of life. They don't know the difference between right and wrong. They don't know dharma and adharma, and even if they know, they don't do, largely. Or they adhere to dharma for the purpose of achieving heaven and heavenly opulence, and like just missing the target, at least missing the center of the target, the goal. So when we're hearing these nice pastimes, it's good to bear in mind some of these things while we're trying to control our mind and senses. There's this higher place of consciousness. The residents of Vrindavan are there. And hearing from them about Krishna's pastimes is very purifying, just like hearing Maha Mantra. Although we may not be able to understand the fullness of what the Maha Mantra is, by hearing these pastimes similarly, we may not understand the fullness of what's going on. But the Lord is beyond material nature. Now they're not, the gopis, the elder gopis, they're not offering prayers. There are many sections of the Bhagavatam, abundant sections of the Bhagavatam, prayers and prayers and prayers, saying what Lord Vishnu or Lord Narayana or Lord Krishna's position is, prayers and prayers and prayers. Just like coming up chapter 14, Brahma is elucidating details and details and details and details about the transcendental position of Krishna. And Krishna doesn't say anything. You please me very much by your beautiful prayers. He doesn't say anything because he wants to go back and be with the cowherd boys and have lunch. But no harm with those beautiful, beautiful, beautiful prayers in so many other sections. But when we hear of the Bhagavatam that have such prayers, but when we're hearing these wonderful pastimes of Krishna directly from Shukadeva Goswami, this is the Lord of Transcendence, and he likes stealing that which is his. And interacting with those, not like they think this is ours, he's stealing what's ours, but you know, in material consciousness, they're not thinking in material consciousness, but they're speaking as if they are, although they're not. They're actually ecstatic, and they laugh. Now tomorrow we're going to hear one more verse about Krishna's stealing activities. Any discussion? Yeah. Okay. Stand by, there's going to be the next person. Go ahead.
Sharon Paswani, you're mentioning that one or that persons may not understand transcendental morality.
Mm.
So you were saying, perhaps one can even teach mundane morality.
Yes.
So the question is that I wanted to ask if. If mundane morality is not in place, let's say an individual, truly doesn't see that some issue has moral implications, is it that hearing of transcendental morality can assist someone in their writing of the compass in terms of mundane morality?
Let me say, if someone has a sense of transcendental morality, can that assist them in performing mundane morality? Sure. I'll give a really clear example. Gopinath Patanayak. You familiar? So Gopinath was breaking mundane morality because he was attached to being the enjoyer of his facilities. At the end of the pastime, he was awarded not only his service again, but double the salary and same place where he was taking taxes and a silken wrapper from the king. And his realization was, the real good fortune is not that I got all these things instead of being killed or punished for my transgression of mundane morality, but I didn't get the blessing, the mercy, the benefit that two of my brothers received, Ramananda Roy and Vaninath. They have no desire for sense gratification, so can you give that mercy to me too? Lord Chaitanya. And so the transcendental morality is what we do should be for Krishna. Now what the king said and what Lord Chaitanya said, both of them, when the king gave his special arrangement to Gopinath, and Lord Chaitanya said, going forward in time, don't take money that belongs to the king. Don't take money that belongs to the king. Morality. It's illegal and it's immoral. Whenever you do receive, use that in service to Krishna. He said, I'd like to become renounced like my two brothers. He said, if that's the case, if you all become renounced, who's going to look after the maintenance needed for such a large family? Father and five brothers. You have to continue doing. But don't do in the mood of sense gratification. So, transcendental morality can support mundane morality. Yes. And, who's got a clear picture of what transcendental morality is? Well, a transcendental personality will know what transcendental morality is, and otherwise people don't have a clue. They can guess. They can have their convictions. But anyway, the short answer is yes. You have something behind you?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, we were hearing that wherever Krishna went, all the darkness was removed by the jewels he wore and his his transcendental form. So I was thinking that wherever Krishna's pastimes are, they remove all the darkness within the heart as well. But it seems like all of this, the starting is with hearing Shravanam. So, like, how could we increase the quality?
How do we do what?
Increase the quality of hearing.
Well, it takes purification, and through purification, quality will increase. So, sustained over time helps increase quality. Hearing in a regulated fashion, hearing from the right sources, hearing in the right mood helps increase the quality of one's hearing. Right mood of, let's say, mood of faith. I may not understand, but let me continue to hear because it will nourish faith. And faith will be nourished by the good, all those other things, good association, regular hearing, the instruction to do so, the instruction to engage in ardent hearing, Prabhupada's writing, ardent hearing. So the instruction to do so is an impetus. Simply because he said so, we try. Yeah.
Thank you, Maharaj. It seems like there's a gap in Krishna's pastimes, since he's newly born, and now that seems like it's like 5 years. What happens?
There's no info. It's not details. It's giving highlights. We only know what's there. But it's wonderful. But you know specifically what happened between this age and that age, we don't have. At least in the Bhagavatam, it's not there. Maybe in other writings, some of those details are there. But within the Bhagavatam, it's not. And I'm not, right off the top of my head, I'm not thinking of some details. I mean, it's even less in the whole section of Ramayana, where Lord Ramachandra is born. It's called the first section of Balakanda, and there's not a whole lot about his childhood pastimes. Little. I'm sure, I don't know offhand where, but I'm sure there's sections that detail those pastimes. It's not here in the Bhagavatam. Okay? Mataji, she had her hand up first.
One thing that struck me was you said till one is not free from the modes of material nature, one cannot understand Krishna's transcendental pastimes.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been thinking how for myself a plan of how I can be free from the modes of nature. and one thing I was contemplating or even thinking about is, say, I see myself doing some activities in the mode of ignorance or some thoughts that pull me down. So then I have a plan for myself to go from ignorance to passion. Meaning have some activities which will move me from ignorance to passion.
Okay,
and then,
fine. Okay.
So I don't know if I wanted to get your recommendation on, is this a right approach, or meaning what would benefit some for me in specific to elevate myself from the modes of nature?
Well, I'd like to edit, you know, the step from the mode of ignorance to the step of the mode of passion. It's another contamination. And so, but if the language you used was activities that can help me get out of that ignorance place, that's not exactly ramping up passion. It's activity that's directed towards, you could say even self-improvement, but self, what's self? The higher self. So my editing here is not just mode of passion, because mode of passion, the words alone, is attached to the results of one's activities and trying to be the enjoyer of the results of one's activities, and let me go over there to the mode of passion and do passionate stuff instead of ignorant stuff. That's not, it's not going to take you out of where you want to go, where you don't want to be and to where you want to go. All I'm saying here is just add the dimension of activities that are of a nature that they're pleasing to Krishna in any one of those things, and do those things, and then the Krishna factor, the Krishna element, will become, it will take you out of that dark space. It's, say the same thing in a different way. The whole of the Bhagavatam was compiled by Vyasadeva, and the whole of the Vedas compiled by Vyasadeva, recognizing the age of Kali, the age of darkness. So he didn't say, okay, the solution is ramp up the activities of passion. He decided to take the knowledge of the Vedas, write them and explain them, and then it was incomplete because it wasn't efficient glorification of the person. So take up activities that lead to the glorification of the personality of Godhead by nature, whatever that might be, or combination of things that are within your reach, not, unrealistic, above your reach and capacity to sustain, whatever those things might be. Cleanliness, which is a mode of goodness, but for Krishna, and instead of lamenting or whatever is the ignorant space, think of something that is pleasing to Krishna, and then do that something that's pleasing to Krishna. There's potency that takes one out of the lamentation phase. There's potency there, and done with faith, it carries one beyond. Okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is a very nice, wonderful class today, very nice. So many things you explained, gave so much intricacy. I could not catch one thing you said, like discussion between Ramananda Rai and Rupa Goswami. Can you please repeat that object of love?
Say it again?
Yeah, please.
In that section of Chaitanya Charitamrita, where some senior devotees are brought by Lord Chaitanya to inspect by hearing and tasting the contents of Rupa Goswami's writings. One of the questions, the principal examiner was Ramananda Roy. So Ramananda Roy asked, could you read that section that describes the nature of spontaneous devotional service? Or ecstatic love or something like that. So the verse that Rupa Goswami quotes describes the nature of that love. And the nature of that love is, in short, unconditional. If the object of love, Krishna, does something that makes one uncomfortable or unhappy, it doesn't disturb the relationship. The relationship doesn't become weakened. It's not just you look the other way. It just doesn't weaken that relationship. It's because it's spontaneous. Like here, the elder gopis are saying Krishna's come and stolen, etc., etc. But it's spontaneous love. This doesn't diminish the love. Or when the object of love does something and says something that's nice, you look upon it nice. Doesn't like, you know, make the relationship better instead of kind of normal, like better. And conversely, it's unconditional. That's ecstatic love. When I do something in relation to the object of love that's not so pleasing to the other person, it doesn't diminish the nature of that relationship. That's ecstatic love. So when the object is Krishna and Krishna's devotee does something that's untoward, Krishna will correct it, but Krishna doesn't hold some negative feeling towards that person, that devotee. Shipram bhavati dharma. He corrects the situation, makes things nice again, because of his love for that devotee. That's the nature of pure love or ecstatic love. Okay. Last question.
Well, thank you, Maharaj, for the class. When a person is trying to learn about Krishna's pastimes, doesn't he have to have some type of experience in chanting the holy name first before they can understand?
Well, have to. As was spoken a little bit earlier, one won't understand as long as one is influenced by the modes of nature. One won't understand. But I could be chanting Hare Krishna and also not understand. So it's not have to. It's just like another answer to your question. Prabhupada's plan for which he executed, giving Krishna book to people that don't chant Hare Krishna. How much can they understand? Influenced by the modes of nature, they won't be able to. But potency is there anyway. Potency is there with chanting, even we don't understand. So it's just another cleansing opportunity, spiritual potency being extended to others' opportunity. So one can read if one hasn't chanted. Not have to. That was your language. Okay? Is that all right? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.